The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I think these maybe were Democrats, but for me, they're a Republican. We built a lot of great buildings in this city with these people, and they've given me great support. They're really amazing.
All right. Early this morning, former President Trump meeting with construction workers in New York City, and soon he's going to be back in the courtroom for day 7 of his New York trial.
Before he goes back to court, he took a chance here to stop and talk to union workers and construction workers, really trying to gain traction here in deep blue New York, which he says he plans on changing to red. Make a play for New York while he's here in court, right? Because if he has to be in a courtroom, they say, well, they're going to bring the campaign trail right here in the Big Apple to Donald Trump. So we spoke at that construction site, you guys, in Midtown before he heads to that courtroom. The former president joined by local union members, and the crowd was loud for 6 a.m.
I put out a poll in my union. President Trump is leading Joe Biden 3-1 on my presidential poll out of my 9,000 members right now. We are very tired of the situation with groceries, inflation, gas prices, illegal immigration, crime. We're living it every day in New York City.
And many of those people, you guys, who are out here are lifelong Democrats, like who you just heard from. That's not going to be the case, okay, for many of those construction workers. And that gives you a pulse on what average, everyday Americans are feeling. In terms of President Joe Biden, who just got a union endorsement yesterday in D.C., one of the things the president said about former President Trump is that he doesn't connect with blue-collar, average American workers. But we saw quite a different scene out here today in New York City.
That was Donald Trump last week hitting the campaign trail in what is now, what you could now probably call a swing state of New York. That was Trump in Midtown Manhattan. You heard it there. Chants of USA, chants of Donald Trump. All of those union workers screaming for him. And at 6:30 in the morning, this is Donald Trump's campaign trail. Alvin Bragg, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, they're making him campaign in Manhattan, and he is winning people over. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston. Thank you for joining us on what should be the last show where we have a guest host for a little while. Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back for tomorrow's show. I'm having to pre-record this show ahead of time, so forgive me if something major and drastic happens over the weekend and you don't hear about it on this show, but I will try to cover some of the big events that happened on Friday as well. Again, any comments for the show, send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Remember the phone number, 1-866-930-3024. And of course, don't forget about our upcoming interview with Dinesh D'Souza and his visit to campus on May 5th. Tickets are available now at thetrumpet.com. There's a little icon at the top of the website you can click that will take you right to the page where you can purchase tickets. Trump's surging popularity there in Manhattan. Again, the contrast, like Mr. Fleury talked about last week or the week before. Look at how all of these things backfire on the Democrats. Well, we'll bind them up in the courtrooms. They even have blocked off areas or cordoned them off so that people can't get close to the courthouse to show support. So he goes to these other areas of Manhattan where people are screaming in support for him. And again, that was at 6 in the morning. He's having to get up and be on the road that early to get to these, to get to this trial. And he makes a stop along the way, and all of those workers are out there. This is supposed to be blue-collar Biden. It's blue-collar Trump now. he's out there relating with every man. The union workers there in Midtown Manhattan cheering for him. And Joe Biden, I mean, I think it was Jen Psaki who said, Biden never starts his day before 9 o'clock, something like that. And this has Democrats fuming. They cannot push back. They can't control the narrative enough. They can't give you enough fake news to cover up for Trump's surging popularity. And that probably means he's even more popular than they're going to give him credit for. Notice how frustrated this CNN pollster gets in this clip about what the numbers that he just can't push back on any longer. This is clip six.
This is viewed favorably across Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. In the 2020 exit polls, what do we see? 50% of voters view Joe Biden on average favorably in those states, compared to just 45% for Donald Trump. Look at the Joe Biden trend line where he is now. Joe Biden is far less like than he was 4 years ago. Just 43% of voters now view Joe Biden favorably in these states. And Donald Trump, despite everything that has happened, is actually slightly more liked. 47% favorable rating. So this isn't just a lesser of two evils that's going on. The fact is that Donald Trump is, in fact, better liked than he was 4 years ago and is better liked than Joe Biden is right now in these battleground states. It's pretty clear.
Despite everything that has happened, we can't stop him. I love that. They've tried everything. And he's being comical there. But all of these trials against him, and it's having the opposite effect. It's making him more popular. We'll talk quite a bit about these cases and how they're failing from the Democrat perspective. I mean, they're very successful for what Donald Trump is trying to achieve, delaying them, helping his popularity, making him look like that martyr. I mean, every time they go against him, it proves his point that the system is rigged. This is the Washington Examiner. Trump's trial isn't hurting his swing state leads. It says, but even as national presidential polling is narrowed with Trump's Real Clear Politics average polling lead over the incumbent Democrat sliding a bit, the Trump on trial narrative hasn't percolated to the most crucial swing states. It says that or the swing states have too much at stake politically, be it a 19% increase in prices since Biden took office, or the national security risks at the southern border or abroad, to care about Trump's personal failures. It says a new slate of polls from Bloomberg and Morning Consult find Trump's lead has actually expanded to 7 points in Arizona, up from 5 points last month, 8 points in Nevada, up from 2 points, 4 points in Wisconsin, where Biden was leading last month by 1 point, 1 point in Pennsylvania, that was a tie earlier, and 10 points in North Carolina, up from six. Says Trump's leads only shrunk in Georgia from 7 points to six, and reversed in Michigan from a tie to a 2 point lead for Biden. Those are those polls that CNN pollster couldn't get away from. Somehow Trump is even more popular now than he was in 2016. One of those things, even that union boss mentioned, we're sick of high prices. We're sick of having to pay so much. This is from CNBC. GDP growth slowed to a 1.6% rate in the first quarter, well below expectations. I mean, there's only so many things that the Biden administration can do to pump these numbers up every quarter. And then their equations, the algorithms that they change every quarter to make the numbers look better than they are, well, eventually that starts to fail on them and they've got to upgrade it again so they can make the numbers look more beneficial for them. It says U.S. economic growth was much weaker than expected to start the year, and prices rose at a faster pace, the Commerce Department reported on Thursday. It says gross domestic product, a broad measure of goods and services produced in the January through March period, increased at a 1.6% annualized pace when adjusted for seasonality and inflation. Says economists surveyed by Dow Jones had been looking for an increase of 2.4% following a 3.4% gain in the last quarter of 2023. Well, they didn't get it. And it won't be long. I'm sure they'll come up with a new way to report the numbers to make it look like Biden's doing great again. This is the Biden boom, blowing up the economy. And this is how, notice that we'll play this montage of just local outlets reporting on how prices are impacting locals, and then listen for the regime narrative at the end here, clip 10.
Yeah, these GDP numbers were shocking.
Yeah,
we were expecting a 2.4% growth.
Yep.
The actual came in at 1.6.
Correct.
Huge loss. And with rising inflation, even the Fed is admitting that inflation is not only sticky, but it seems to be going in the wrong direction.
Yep.
That adds up to stagflation.
I know. And I was preparing myself for your using that word, because that's something we haven't seen since the 1970s.
No Kid Hungry says 85% of families believe food costs are rising faster than their income. Nearly half of New Yorkers say in the last 12 months, it has become much harder to afford groceries. But higher prices also impacting some people more than others. 43% of school families and rural residents say they eat low quality or limited food items because of the cost.
The average price of a gallon of gas in the Buffalo Niagara Falls region today is $3.56. That's up 11 cents from last week and 26 cents from last month. The average price in March was $3.35. The state average right now is $3.69.
According to Gas Buddy, gas prices in Seattle are up 4 cents per gallon from last week for $4, and it's an average of $4.79 a gallon. Prices in Seattle are 23 cents per gallon higher than a month ago, 11 cents higher than a year ago. In Tacoma, gas is down 5 cents for an average of $4.61 a gallon. In Yakima, gas is up 5 cents for an average of $4.43 a gallon. The national average price of gas is up 4 cents per gallon from last week and 10 cents per gallon from a month ago. The national average is $3.64.
So it is a tough time, but I also work for an administration that has done everything that we can, this president, to turn the economy around.
Folks, one of the reasons I ran for president was to rebuild the backbone of the middle class. And we have. We're following my blue-collar blueprint to rebuild America, and guess what? It's working.
The blue-collar blueprint. And you go and you talk to the blue-collar workers, and what are they all saying? Trump, Trump, Trump. In Manhattan, of all places, the blue-collar workers, they don't want Scranton Joe. They want the billionaire Donald Trump. Following that, I just had to comment because I read this story earlier. There was the clip there of Karine Jean-Pierre. And apparently, the Biden White House is trying to get rid of her. This shouldn't really be a surprise. She was hired because she checked off the woke boxes, and she's done a horrible job. The montages are all over the place about, can't comment. I really have nothing to say. Oh, I'll comment on that later. Or she just looks down and starts reading something that doesn't have anything to do with the question. So by the merits, she's not good at the job. According to this article from Insiders, a lot of her friends in the administration have been trying to gently prod her to step down so that she can start her career path somewhere else. And she is still there. She is resisting those prods. She wants that job. And then some are saying, well, why don't they just fire her? And they say, you can't fire her. This is the woke administration. This is the DEI administration. She's unfireable. She checks all of the boxes. You can't remove her. Anyway, back to the economy. Joe Biden telling you that everything's fine. Don't believe your lying eyes. Even the way they phrase some of the questions on those surveys is insulting. It'll be something like, do you believe your income isn't keeping up with inflation? As if you don't know what your own, you know, pocketbook says. As if you don't know what your own budget says. As if you're kidding yourself if you think you're paying more at the grocery store. Because the statistics that come from the federal bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. that probably don't ever go to grocery stores, they tell you that that's not true. This is from Newsmax. Biden's 44.6% capital gains tax proposal is a 100-year high. So what's Biden's solution? More taxes. Higher taxes now. The bracket that they want to put this in, I think it's 45% for capital gains, and that would hit higher earners beforehand, but states already put pretty large taxes on capital gains. And they're saying in some states, like California, that would put a capital gains rate tax of 60% on profits that are made for, again, people that are over a certain income threshold. A lot of those are going to be business owners. A lot of those people are the millionaires and billionaires that run the restaurants. And where do they pass that cost on down to? The food prices. Again, getting back to that point about contrast, you've got the economy, you know, a lot of people hurting, a lot of people say it's going in the wrong direction, and then you have the Biden administration say, it's fine. Don't believe your lying eyes, believe what I tell you to believe. And then you've got Donald Trump, the high energy campaign, despite having to sit in a courtroom 8 or 9 hours a day, despite having to get up at 6 in the morning if he wants to do any campaigning, has a high energy campaign with all of the blue collar workers backing and supporting him. Talk about contrast. When Donald Trump went to meet with those union workers, I think it was the same day Joe Biden was meeting with union workers in Washington, D.C., and this was where he read the teleprompter again. I don't know why they put these cues on the screen for him, but he wanted to get a chant going that was 4 more years, 4 more years. So then in between that, it spells out the word pause so that he'll stop talking and let the crowd chant. So he says, I should have just played the clip. He says, 4 more years, pause, 4 more years. There's just no energy whatsoever in the room, just sucks it all out of there. And then today, there's this, or not today, this was on Friday, Axios runs this headline, scoop, Biden changes walking routine to Marine One. You've undoubtedly seen the clips. I mean, he has arthritis, something is not right with the way that he walks. And they don't like the optics of that. They don't like Biden's vigor. Axios says, President Biden has introduced a change to his White House departure and return routine. Instead of walking across the South Lawn to and from Marine One by himself, he's now often surrounded by aides. Why it matters? With aides walking between Biden and journalists' camera position outside the White House, the visual effect is to draw less attention to the 81-year-old's halting and stiff gait. This is the curated presidency. Everything they have to do, it's like Hollywood. They've got to present to you, I mean, right from the election, even before the election, there's the clip. This is the new routine that you're going to see when he's coming out of Marine One. You see the staffers come out of the other door, and then they hustle over to him, and then they'll block him from the side and just act like, well, we're all just doing this normally. Nobody told us to walk next to him like this. But this is the fake campaign from 2019, the basement campaign, scripted. You don't see the man. Then they steal the election, a fake election. Then you get following that. You've got all of these just curated events for everything that he does, even the health checkup that he gets. Axios says, zoom in. Some Biden advisors have told Axios they're concerned that videos of Biden walking and shuffling alone, especially across the grass, have highlighted his age. And this is, I bet CNN and MSNBC won't care that much about it. And really, it's not something that personally I would care that much about. I mean, some of the people walking next to him don't look like they're walking that easily. Maybe that's part of what they're curating. I don't know. But the reason you look at this is, well, one, obviously he's the president of the United States. Secondarily, they set the precedent for this. Who could ever forget Donald Trump slowly walking down that ramp, the wet ramp, after speaking at the Navy Academy? And it must have been weeks of coverage about Donald Trump's mental fitness because he gingerly shuffled down that steel ramp that was wet. All this slander that they can throw at Donald Trump. And you're not allowed to rebut any of it. Donald Trump's not allowed to defend himself. And then Joe Biden has to be shielded as he's walking because the optics are just getting that bad. And then they let him do an interview. They let him do an interview with the far left media figure. I can't remember his Stern, Howard Stern, I think is his name. And Biden uttered this big oopsie on the Howard Stern podcast. You can play clip 7.
I don't know if you're going to debate your opponent.
I am somewhere. I don't know when. I'm happy to debate him.
I don't think that's part of the plan, Mr. Biden. There are no plans for any debates. And Biden's aides do not want him to do any debates. But they let Biden on that podcast. Stern asked what I assume would be just all softball questions. And I don't think he was trying to do a gotcha. I think that was meant to be probably an easy question. And Biden said, yeah, I'm looking forward to the debates. Uh-oh. We're going to have to schedule debates now. Joe Biden said he's up for it. What staffer is going to go and tell him he's not doing it? And why? Donald Trump wasted no time in tweeting. Sorry, he did not tweet. I've got to get that right because he's not back on Twitter. I follow an account that takes what he posts on Truth and then it just posts it back onto Twitter. So this would be a truth bomb. I'm going to call them truth bombs. Donald Trump replied, well, I don't know if I'll read this whole thing. Crooked Joe Biden just announced that he's willing to debate. Everyone knows he doesn't really mean it, but in case he does, I say anywhere, anytime, any place, an old expression used by fighters. I suggest Monday evening, Tuesday evening, I suggest Monday evening, Tuesday evening, or Wednesday evening at my rally in Michigan, a state that he is in the process of destroying with his EV mandate. You gotta miss Donald Trump. And the alternative, he's in New York City today, although probably doesn't. I will get through this. In the alternative, he's in New York City today, although, can you just put it on the screen? In the alternative, he's in New York City today, although probably doesn't know it, and so am I, stuck in one of the many court cases that he instigated as election interference against a political opponent. A continuing witch hunt. It's the only way he thinks he can win. In fact, let's do the debate at the courthouse tonight on national television. I'll wait around. I don't know why that one wasn't prepared on screen, but sorry for that. I made it through it in the end. Everybody is running back to Donald Trump. They know. You just read something like that and you can tell he obviously wrote that. You go to Joe Biden's social media, you go to his TikTok, you know he's not writing those things. Bill Barr came out. He said that he'll vote for Donald Trump. Listen to this interview that he had with, I think it was Larry Kudlow, clip 8.
It's time for some deregulation. I know a candidate for president who wants to deregulate and cut taxes. And there's a little birdie that told me that you are now in favor of Mr. Trump's reelection. Is that true?
Yeah, well, I've said, yeah, the choice now is a binary choice between these two candidates. And of the two, I support President Trump. And one of the reasons is because I think many of our critical problems, including the regulation, crime, restoring law and order, restoring control over our borders, rebuilding our defense in this increasingly dangerous world, standing by our allies. I trust President Trump to do that much more so than President Biden, I think. And I also worry very much that in the batting circle with Joe Biden is Vice President Kamala Harris. I feel that under these circumstances, the Republicans have to win in November.
For him to say that, it's so arrogant and audacious. I mean, he talks about Biden being a threat and then about Kamala, but he was in a position to stop that in 2020. It's no surprise that this would be Obama 2.0. He allowed the deep state to steal that election. He issued the stand down order to investigators in Michigan, told them to stop looking into the election steal. It's going to divide us. It's going to cause a civil war. Leave it alone. And now, Joe Biden is a threat to our nation. And Donald Trump, he's the best alternative that we have. As if that wasn't obvious in 2020. I mean, we've talked about it on this show. There was the steal, but look how much has been revealed from that point, 2020, and now to 2024. The mask is off. No one would say they are not anti-American. No one would say that there's some good intention behind what they're doing. It's an attack on America. Donald Trump, once again, quickly reacted to Bill Barr's comments. This was another truth bomb. He says, "Wow, former Attorney General Bill Barr, who let a lot of great people down by not investigating voter fraud in our country, has just endorsed me for president, despite the fact that I called him weak, slow-moving, lethargic, gutless, and lazy." That was in the New York Post. "Based on the fact that I greatly appreciate his wholehearted endorsement, I am removing the word lethargic from my statement. Thank you, Bill, MAGA 2024. just playing with them. I don't know. I very much doubt Bill Barr will ever make it back into Donald Trump's inner circle. I mean, how could you forgive somebody for what he did when he had the power to expose it? I've just got a comment on one more funny story. Funny and sad. This is Adam Schiff. You know how much he hates Donald Trump and how he lies. And he was going, he's running to be the senator to take Dianne Feinstein's seat in California. And he's going to this ritzy dinner with some affluent lawyers, millionaires, and it's a suited event. Everybody's wearing a suit and a tie in this photo. And then Adam Schiff is wearing a regular long, there's the picture. And he's wearing his what do you call those things? Sweater vest. Looks like he's wearing a fisherman vest type thing. Why is he dressed differently than the rest of them? Well, Adam Schiff in San Francisco had his car broken into and all of his luggage was stolen. I mean, it's the perfect story. Democrat-run California. Even the Senate candidate is not immune from the Democrat policies that are destroying what was once the greatest state in America. Fox News says, "California Senate candidate Adam Schiff was given a rude welcome to San Francisco on Thursday as he was reportedly a victim of a theft just hours before a ritzy campaign dinner." Says he still proceeded to the dinner wearing his street clothes there. And then the host of that dinner, as he welcomes Adam Schiff, says, I guess it's welcome to San Francisco, Adam Schiff." I mean, to them, I don't know, is it just a joke? I mean, this is what average people put up with now in California. You see pictures and you'll hear stories from people that live out there. They just leave their windows rolled down so they don't get broken. They leave the trunk open and they'll put signs on there that say, "There's nothing in it, don't break in." That's the new America. That's Obama's America. And to them, welcome to San Francisco. That's just the way it is. It's a joke to them. Lawless America is lawlessness in the streets, and it's lawlessness in all of these nice decorated buildings in Washington, D.C. and in California. From head to toe, there is sickness. I wanted to touch on this one story, talking again about the lawfare being used against Donald Trump and his allies. The Arizona Attorney General indicted 11 Republicans for this so-called fake elector scheme. They like to call it a fake elector scheme. They say the same thing to Donald Trump as if this was some illegal scheme. It's actually the legal way you would challenge an election. There's always alternate electors. That's how the Electoral College works. There's Republican electors and there's Democrat electors. And if Congress is going to say, "We reject the electors you sent because there's overwhelming fraud in your state," well, you've got to present alternate electors. So preparing them, you could argue the ins and outs of whether or not it's constitutional, but it's not an illegal scheme. It's not something that you would put someone in jail for. It's something that you would take them to court for and let the justice system reconcile. But they're being criminally charged, and they call it fake. They call them fake electors. This attorney general in Arizona, I didn't bring the clip. She says, "I will not allow American democracy to be undermined." As if that is the crime. She doesn't say really what the crime is. It's a crime to undermine democracy. Well, that's a pretty slippery slope. What does that mean? What exactly undermines democracy? I would say a lack of transparency in an election undermines democracy. I would say people going to vote in Maricopa County and in red districts not having their voting machines work, I would say that undermines democracy quite a bit. But those people aren't charged. This attorney general, her name is Chris May. She's just elected, quote unquote, elected in 2022. Now remember that election. This was the one where they were telling everybody, put the ballots in drawer three, the machines don't work. Now you've got to go to another polling station if you want your ballot counted in front of you, which is what everybody comes to expect. It's affirmed that it's gone through. Instead, you just got to drop it in this drawer and hope that they hand it to the right person to count it. You don't see it tabulated. And Carrie Lake loses. And this attorney general, she wins. She wins in this statewide election that over 3 million people voted in. Guess how much she won that election by? 280 votes. She gets all the power of that state to go after her political opponents. Not in the 2022 election. She goes back to 2020. And this election, we talked to Carrie Lake on this show. We talked to the people that she was traveling with. There are still lawsuits about this election because arguably this election right here is a bigger deal than who the governor is. Because if you win that attorney general slot, you get to litigate that election. And Abe Hamedy, he lost by 280 votes in an election where all these mail-in ballots come in and they get sent to Runbeck as part of, we could talk about the chain of custody of these ballots for hours about where that ballot goes and how many vulnerabilities there are in that system. And then to win by 280 votes and now have the power to go after her political enemies. She won, the percentage breaks down, 49.94% to 49.93%. That is how she won. And now she's going after Donald Trump's circle. Someone pointed out, now that everyone who's standing up to expose the corrupt election in 2020 is getting indicted, having gag orders on them, getting put in jail, who's going to sound the alarm in 2024? This article at Town Hall, I don't have a lot of time to get into it. It's titled, "The Left Would Prosecute Trump for Acts He Never Committed, But Obama Did." Talks about the Obama drone strikes where he killed American citizens. He has full immunity from that because it was an official act. Now think about how they go after Trump now. He can't appear on that ballot. That's how you would litigate these issues. Not before a far left judge, not before a far left jury in Manhattan or Washington, D.C. You'd put him on the ballot. And not an election where you mail out ballots to hundreds of millions of people and there's no way to know who's filling them out. Not that way. In a proper election, that's how you would sort out these problems. They cannot risk Americans choosing their leader. They can't risk democracy actually functioning. They can't risk it. They can't risk letting the people choose. So they've got to try to remove him from the ballot. They've got to bankrupt him. They've got to try to put him in jail. And like Tucker Carlson said, well, what options are they left with after that? How far will they take it? You've got the Jack Smith documents case against Donald Trump. And again, there's this judge, Eileen Cannon, she's unsealing more and more documents. And in one of them, I think the prosecutor's name is Jay Bratt. It's in my notes there. Works for Jack Smith. He goes up to Trump's assistant. So Trump's assistant was also indicted, and he's got to get his own lawyer. And Jack Smith's prosecutors approach that lawyer and say something to the degree of, I think you were slated to be a judicial nominee in this district court. Is that right? We wouldn't want to mess that up, would we? Threatening lawyers, because this lawyer was telling his client not to testify against Donald Trump. And Jack Smith and his group of thugs go up to his lawyer and try to bribe him, threaten him, probably more accurately, to get his client to testify, to flip against Donald Trump. That's Obama's justice system. That's how that works. And the more they do it, the stronger that makes Donald Trump, because it makes his point. It makes the point that hundreds of millions of Americans see every day. Then you've got this immunity case that Donald Trump's having to deal with Jack Smith. Notice what Trump said following that case, or following that hearing on Thursday, clip one.
But the U.S. Supreme Court had a monumental hearing on immunity, and the immunity having to do with presidential immunity. And I think it was made clear, I hope it was made clear, that a president has to have immunity. You don't have a president, or at most you can say it would be a ceremonial president. That's not what the founders had in mind. They're not talking about ceremonial. We want presidents that can get things done and bring people together. So I heard the meeting was quite amazing, and the justices were on their game. So let's see how that all turns out. But again, I say presidential immunity, very powerful presidential immunity, is imperative, or you practically won't have a country anymore.
Now, would they ever bring that against Barack Obama? Absolutely not. He needs to be the king. And what they're doing, as some people have noted about this case, is that this is their attempt. If they can get the immunity rule that they want, they can just handcuff Donald Trump as president, because what do they want? They want the deep state to run the office. That is how it works. Joe Biden is not running things. The people below him, behind him, are running things. And they want to make that a formality, essentially, that the deep state has absolute power. I mean, when the justices brought up some of these other cases, like Obama and the drone strikes, or FDR putting Japanese people in internment camps, the answer from the prosecutors was, well, the attorney general told the president he could do those things. Okay, so that makes the attorney general the end of the law. No, the president is the head of the executive branch. He is the chief law enforcer. And there's a system for how laws are enforced against the top dog in that case. And that is impeachment. And in a lot of ways, though, it's something that the framers didn't touch a lot, because impeachment was there. Impeachment was, the crimes have to be so obvious and so egregious that you'll get a supermajority of Congress to remove him. If not, then you have a president who has to worry about all of these petty little things, and if he's going to be criminally tried for them when he leaves office. And Alvin Bragg, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, makes that point for Donald Trump. The fact that he's being criminally tried for that petty little thing. This impeachment... It's meant to keep the president in check, but it also is meant to protect him from one radical judge. It's meant to protect him from one radical prosecutor in California or in Washington, D.C. And then they bring up all of these red herring arguments. Well, Donald Trump, I guess he's allowed to murder somebody? He's allowed to murder someone? Obviously, If that was the case, impeachment would happen very quickly, and then he can be criminally tried. But what they're doing is they're bringing these legal cases that no one has brought in the history of this country. So if you're going to make these cases that are going to redefine the presidency, we're not going to rush to do that just so you can have it done before November of 2024. It is a hard question. It's why the Supreme Court has kicked the can down the road so often. And it's interesting now that they're having to face this when it comes to, you know, helping out Donald Trump. Listen to what Jonathan Turley had to say on this immunity case, clip two.
Well, if this trajectory continues from oral argument, it was a good day for Donald Trump, because there were five justices that clearly were not buying into the D.C. Circuit's approach. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to say that Trump is immune from prosecution. But at a minimum, if that is the case, they would likely have to remand it to the district court to say, we need you to develop this record a little further. If they do that, it's hard to see how this could possibly be tried before the election. And if former President Trump is made the next president, Jack Smith may never see a jury in this case. I mean, it could end the prosecutions.
May never see a jury in this case because they set themselves a trap, like we've covered on this show. They overplayed it. They made it so convoluted that they won't get their case. And that is part of it. It had to be that way. Otherwise, it would have been shot down so quickly. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had the red meat for CNN and MSNBC. Otherwise, they wouldn't get the talking point of the, what is it now, 93 indictments against him. They love saying that. So they had to overcharge. And what's the hurry? Why do they want this done so fast? And Jack Smith, he won't say. He can't say it. The CNN legal analyst, he calls it the E word. Jack Smith cannot utter the E word. And the Supreme Court says, listen, if we're going to make a ruling on this case, this changes a lot. What's the hurry? Jack Smith won't say. Oh, but the Democrat, oh, they're very upset. This isn't going to happen before the election. Okay, it's about the election. That's what they want. They want this case. And if that district court, maybe if they stayed within their line a little bit, if they weren't so rabid with Trump derangement syndrome, and they picked a narrow application of that law to apply to this case, perhaps the Supreme Court would have said it's fine. But the Supreme Court, that district court really left them with no choice. If that thing stands, then we have just given the deep state absolute control over the presidency. Any prosecutor now, any district attorney can just hamstring a president. So the Supreme Court has to take it, and they don't want to rule on it. So what can they do? They can keep delaying it. And they can say, we believe, you know, it should be applied to this extreme and to this extreme, but we've got to find that middle ground. So, hey, district court, you know, the crazies down there, you can have this back, but you've got to take a narrower approach to it. And then that's going to take more months. And then if the Supreme Court doesn't like it, if Trump, you know, if they appeal it again, it's back up at the Supreme Court. And before you know it, we're past November, and this case just disappears. It was probably a pretty good day for Donald Trump, based on the way the radical left reacted to this hearing. Listen to clip 11.
Clarence Thomas for a moment, because his wife was very much a booster of the big lie. He has declined to recuse himself from this. He apparently has maybe a conflict of interest, or shouldn't maybe be ruling on it at all. Would you expect that he will be vocal tomorrow?
Oh, absolutely. Clarence Thomas's superpower, I think, is shamelessness. And he will not feel any sense of reticence just because his wife tried to overturn the election and was, of course, present for Trump's speech at the Ellipse on January 6th.
Just wow. And a real moment, a real crisis point for the credibility of this court.
They should move the Supreme Court over to the RNC headquarters, because they're acting like a bunch of partisan operatives.
Nothing that happened today with the Supreme Court being in the tank for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Is surprising at all. You.
No.
It's not surprising to me.
At all.
It's not surprising to your viewers at home. You know why? Because we're not stupid, all right? Donald Trump called his shot months ago. He said, my Supreme Court justices will never let this happen to me. And he was absolutely right.
Yep.
So, because the Supreme Court has exposed itself as a partisan institution full of hacks that will do everything in their power to protect Donald Trump and make sure that a Republican can be elected, not just in the next election, but in every election going
forward. Thomas and Alito, I'm not surprised. I mean, those two long ago traded in their black robes for red hats.
The court is not looking impartial or nonpartisan at this point. They didn't need to take this case at all. The appellate court decision was tightly drawn and correct. They didn't take it early on. Once they gave an indication, they dragged it out. And really, the debate today showed a very serious problem, which is they are not deciding the case before them.
The case that the Supreme Court is considering is one in which it's extremely important that there be a trial with a verdict one way or the other before the American people decide whether Donald Trump should become president again. And what we heard in the Supreme Court yesterday makes it almost certain that there won't be such a trial. The court has gone along with the Trump strategy of delay, 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 and that's shameful, is that he was using the powers of the presidency, his power to lean on Congress and other powers in order to violate the Constitution's provisions for ending the term when you lose the election. To see the United States Supreme Court with nothing in the Constitution and no precedent to support it, searching for a way not to hold the former president accountable for that in the criminal process, is itself quite a crime.
Just wow, as that one commentator said. Just wow. Lawrence Tribe, the guy speaking for the last minute, he was the one that brought the Colorado ballot case, the one that got to the Supreme Court that was smacked down 9-0. And there he's saying it's a crime for them not to bring this case. I think he should be happy that they're not ruling on it, because if you get the majority that is the wrong side, they will be very unhappy with that ruling. The Supreme Court, they're again trying to kick the can down the road. It just so happens that in doing this, that helps Donald Trump. Why? Because it's all politicized, because it all has to happen on the DNC's time frame, which is before November. All of those other legal arguments you hear, you can just push those out the side, ignore those things, and just have a clear line of focus. It's about November 2024. And they will tell you everything that they're doing is wrong that doesn't fit into their time frame. Turley has a few more clips about the immunity case. We've covered a bit of that already, of what he explains. And then again, Jack Smith, he won't say it. He won't say election. He won't say the E word. And then you've got, as this immunity case is playing out, you've got Alvin Bragg essentially making Donald Trump's point. Donald Trump is in court all day. For weeks, he will be there. Can that happen to a sitting president? Is that really what would happen to a sitting president because some rogue attorney general decided to indict him? Notice clip 12.
All of the stuff we're talking about is legal.
Right.
You know, none of this is a crime.
Well, except unless, I mean, the argument, Karen, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the argument is that David Pecker doing this was a campaign contribution.
Exactly. And that it's an in-kind campaign contribution. If you're paying for, if it's part of the campaign, as Laura was saying, this is the whole strategy, the timing, it's about
the
campaign.
But look at this. David Pecker says Michael Cohen would look at the PDFs, comment on them, so they would add content based on what Michael Cohen was suggesting.
And there's all sorts of limits on how much anybody individually can contribute to a campaign, and corporations can contribute to a campaign, if at all. So they're, by paying these large sums of money, that's considered a donation.
Although, Tim, we should...
You know, there's a risk for the prosecution because, again, a lot of this stuff is not criminal. And I disagree that some of this, you know, would be an in-kind campaign contribution because the Supreme Court's holding in Citizens United did kind of, you know, move this outside of that. And so if they spend too much time on this, especially right at the beginning, and an appellate court looks at it and say, you've prejudiced this jury by presenting all this information that is, you know, salacious, amoral, but not criminal, then that is the type of thing that can improperly sway the jury to the other side. So I think that, to me, this may actually turn out to be a misstep by the prosecution by spending so much time on this when really this case is about the business record entries of the payments to Michael Cohen, which have nothing to do with any of this.
I agree with that. They have to be careful. As they're putting up their fourth and fifth headline, they better put the brakes on that. There's an important point about credibility when it comes to David Pecker. The Southern District of New York looked very carefully at this case, ultimately decided against charging Donald Trump. But in the course of doing that, they assessed David Pecker and Michael Cohen. They gave David Pecker a non-prosecution agreement, which means they trusted him. You don't give a non-prosecution agreement unless you're comfortable putting that person on the stand. They rejected Michael Cohen. They wrote a sentencing letter to the judge saying, we did not find him fully credible.
So this case that was already turned down by a radical Democrat in Manhattan is resurrected by Alvin Bragg and Obama's DOJ. And look at the start of that case is just all of the salacious gossip, Steele dossier type stuff that they want to bring up against Trump. And those guys on CNN are saying, even if that's true, it's immoral, but it's not illegal. What's the legal issue here? And then Alvin Bragg, again, like we've just said, like Jonathan Turley said, he's making Trump's case. This is holding up the president for weeks at a time. Listen to Jonathan Turley. This is clip 5.
Alvin Bragg is probably the best lawyer Donald Trump has right now. He's making the case to the Supreme Court that there needs to be an immunity protection because he's the problem. This is exactly what the court was worried about. You've got these Democratic district attorneys clearly politicizing the criminal justice system. The Manhattan case is legally absurd, and it's occurring on the very day that the court is considering how to protect presidents. That cannot but help former President Trump.
That cannot but help Donald Trump. All of these attacks against him, the smearing, how they slander and how they lie about him, look at how it backfires. We've been talking about this on this show for over eight years now. I mean, look at God's hand in all of this. No man could orchestrate these things. Los Angeles Times, this is from Harry Lipman, it says, will Trump be tried for January 6th? After Supreme Court arguments, it's more uncertain than ever. For those rightly concerned about the timing of Donald Trump's federal January 6th trial, Thursday's oral arguments before the court gave plenty of reasons for worry. It's not working. It's backfiring on them. Time and time again, it backfires on them. I just wanted to point, we don't have much time left on this show, but an article that we refer to quite often on this show by Mr. Gerald Fleury in January of 2019, Is America's Supreme Court in Bible Prophecy? Talks about Amos 7 and verse 13 and the kingdom's court. And that's referring to the Supreme Court. Mr. Fleury says, I believe this non-religious entity, the Kingdom's House, is referring to the United States Supreme Court. This court was designed to guard the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. In many ways, the Supreme Court is over the whole nation. Even the president is subject to it, which is exactly the type of entity that the House of the Kingdom is referring to. He says, I believe this prophetic account in Amos 7 implies that there is a conservative advantage in the Supreme Court, one that favors Jeroboam or Donald Trump. The confirmation of Kavanaugh could work to help fulfill this prophecy. Keep that in mind as you're watching all of this play out. Keep that in mind as you see Donald Trump visit those union workers in Manhattan. And keep the Bible in mind. That should be what is the lens through which you see all of these events. And again, that's clearly spelled out. It's plainly spelled out in America Under Attack, the book that we promote quite often on this show. If you don't have a copy, get a free copy. Visit the Trumpet website. Again, don't forget about the D'Souza lecture that we have coming up. Get your tickets at thetrumpet.com. If you have any comments for today's show, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you for joining us last week. Mr. Stephen Fleury will be with you again tomorrow. And again, have a great day.